Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Casterbridge podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts. Let them gawp, let them gape. Yes, did you know that we're available on Casterbridge.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audioboo? Well, you do now. Good, isn't it?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Casterbridge podcast with a K, as you know, because John Guile has just told you there, as either William Hartnell or Tom Baker, depending on which one I choose to use at the beginning of this week's podcast. We would like to apologise to the member of our listenership who was offended by the appearance of the Grange Hill theme tune last week. It won't happen again, apart from just there. So, it is the Kill the Moon podcast, in which we discuss what is probably the most divisive episode of Doctor Who since Wedding in River Song, or maybe Fear Her, or Love and Monsters, one of those. So, so basically that's what we're talking about this time. I just want to do a quick body count. Sorry, didn't mean that. Quick head count. James, are you here?
I am.
Excellent. Mute button's working well. Good. And Brian?
I am here.
Excellent. They are here. We're all here. We're all in separate places. Brian is in the United States of Philadelphia.
I am.
Yeah. James is at some made-up campus that he claims to be attending now. And I'm here in the northeast of England, surrounded by factories and coal mines. So there you go. A little bit of that.
Truth.
Yes. And so they're all closed, but, you know. So that's that. So, Kill the Moon, in which the Doctor somehow, I never quite got my head around how the young Courtney ended up on the TARDIS and the Doctor felt it was okay to take her. But anyway, and the Doctor, Courtney and Jenna head off to the moon, accidentally land in a space shuttle, crash land on the moon, get out, find spiders and some astronauts that are with them. And then it's all spooky and webs and dark rooms, power cuts. Tonya Sober gets killed. And that was probably the turning point of the episode, because at that point, things started to turn a bit strange. And it all, as you probably know, and if you don't know, then you really shouldn't be listening to this, it all culminated with the birth of a chicken, space chicken from the moon, which had turned out to be a giant, I'm not making this up, turned out to be a giant egg, and which then laid a moon-sized egg, which, and before we go into that, I just want to say, the only plausible way that that could have happened is if the egg was smaller when it was laid, and then it quickly expanded, perhaps due to the lack of vacuum. That's all I can think of. Oh, the lack of vacuum, sorry, because it was in a vacuum. And and then Clara fell out with the Doctor. And I won't be writing the Casterbridge recap for that episode. I'll leave that honour to Philip Bates. Gentlemen, I think we're going to be having an interesting conversation today. I really don't know where to start with an episode which I enjoyed but found utterly balmy at the same time. I like balmy stuff, as you know. I think there's elements of Douglas Adams about it in many ways. I'm going to let someone else speak now. Brian, Kill the Moon, would you?
I would kill the episode.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to say, like you, I agreed. I enjoyed rather aspects of it, but there were just too many things that just didn't work for me. And one of the things that TV shows do a little too often for me is have their main characters have a falling out that they sort pretty soon after, or they drag out too long. They never really do a good falling out that kind of does work. And also in this episode, I kind of felt that, you know, Clara's falling out there was, I guess, in some way warranted. In other ways, it was kind of like, really, you know, like everything's okay now. You know, I don't know. It seemed rough to me. It seemed like, oh, it's another one of these scenes, another one of these moments. And now we're going to get an episode seemingly of the Doctor by himself having his deadly assassin moment. Seemingly, I don't know, it could be different, But it also seems that after she had her little chat with Danny that, you know, maybe the next time she sees a doctor, there'll be that awkward I'm sorry moment and everything will go on. And it was like, what was the point of having them yell at each other kind of thing? The moon laying an egg size, a moon-sized egg, rather, that was weird. yeah. I think, honestly, I think I probably would have liked this story better had the planet been an alien planet. And the effects of the moon weren't so kind of at home. There was just something about it being like a human decision.
They could have gone to Mars or Saturn, for instance.
Yeah, they could have done something. Somehow it would have seemed a little less silly being some alien planet rather than our... Because if you did that, you could have hatched the moon and then had that planet live without the effects of a moon, which is really how it should have ended. That we really should have had the Earth not have a moon anymore, and seeing like that's probably why humans started to spread out, because it was the start of changes here on Earth. Mm. But you can't do that, because I guess so much of Doctor Who's history has kind of established a moon.
Yeah.
And maybe even the new series, you know, you'd have to go back and look through all those ones. But also, I guess he just didn't want to leave the Earth without a moon, and it was just kind of weird. Like maybe if they had, maybe if instead of having a moon-sized egg laid, they could have had something else laid there where the doctor says that one will take a couple billions of years to expand, but Earth will never be without a moon, blah, 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 would have somehow felt a little bit better. But I don't know. The episode had a lot not enjoyable for me. For instance, Courtney. You know, they spend six episodes now. What is this, the seventh? Yeah, they spend six episodes now building up Danny. And maybe Danny's not going to be a companion. Maybe he is just the way that Clara leaves the TARDIS. But they build him up for like seven episodes. They finally have the Doctor and him come to meet each other. He helps save the day. And the very next episode, what's the natural progression that they do? They bring the most annoying brat little kid again on the TARDIS for no reason whatsoever. It made no sense to me. It should have been Clara introducing Danny to her world by bringing him along. But instead they did this. And like you said, how did the kid even get in the TARDIS? I don't know. This one was a mess to me. So far, six episodes I'd enjoyed, whereas the first one had some issues. Six episodes I really enjoyed, and this one was a mess. Like, it's the first one I don't feel the need to rewatch.
Okay. All right, James.
Yeah, I'm never going to rewatch this one again. I don't think I'm ever going to go near it again after this. Yeah, I'm going to be quite fanish and say it don't exist. It's terrible. It was absolutely appalling. I think the problem is most ones you can actually go from and say one act is good and then it goes downhill. But the beginning was ludicrous. I don't buy that Clara would have let the girl go anywhere outside that police box, let alone go into a onto a moon planet to an alien
egg.
Spot. Egg, sorry. As I've said before, what really got me is that she takes her into a base on the moon, which is covered with webs. Now, you know, webs are normally a bit of a warning sign for people on, you know, your own planet, let alone on a vacuumless satellite like the moon. It just didn't feel real. It sort of stretched the credibility of the characters. And that was a real problem for me. And then from there, it just goes downhill, doesn't it? I mean, I think you can play with fiction. Fiction shouldn't have to be bound to science. But when it becomes too ludicrous, you just lose the ability to suspend disbelief. And even down to the end where it lays the egg, you've still got the issue that, you know, the physics of losing a satellite, even for a few minutes, is just, you know, is incredible. And then if you go down to the argument they have as well, you know, the whole debate, the crux of the story, the whole debate between... Should something new be born or at the risk of everyone else being killed? Again, you don't have enough time to be serious about it. It becomes superficial, and I just didn't believe it. Spurious, really, because I don't believe that. I mean, you've got to remember that planet would have Clara's descendants on it. It would have her children, and you're saying, you know, does the unborn rights of one potential creature take priority over billions of people that you represent, and as I say, could be your bloodline, could be your family, and I, you know, there is a very vague, abortion argument there. Does the rights of an unborn creature So perhaps I shouldn't use creature when we're talking about abortion. Should the rights of an unborn
entity, being
take priority over the rights of those who are currently existing? In the case of abortion, obviously, it's the mother. In the case of this fictitious story, it's the case of, you know, a whole planet. And, you know, it's quite a serious question, and it's just handled so frivolously. And I don't really believe Clara's position on it. I'm not even sure I believe Courtney's position on it particularly. It just felt it was created to create the 50-50 divide required.
Okay, what about the doctor's position? Because a lot of people have been complaining about this.
In what sense do they complain?
In the same way that Clara would.
Well, yeah, but that again annoyed me because that, I mean, she even says it in her argument that basically she's having a tantrum, that she's been made to feel stupid. And she, you know, a bit like Rose, decides to take it out on him by exiling him to loneliness, which she knows very well is the very thing, if you take deep breath as an example, that is damaging for him because he chose to take a stance. And it was a stance which you can say is utterly fair because, you know, he has rights too. If he doesn't want to actually make a decision on the rights of people of a planet that he doesn't own, surely that's his decision. I mean, the other problem with the argument of this episode is that you get this very righteous Danny Pink at the end who sort of says, yes, he's done what I said you would do. He's made you a soldier, when he's done the opposite, because he's not told her to follow orders. He's actually said, this is your problem. Perhaps it's something that you should deal with and decide for yourselves. Why should I have to? I'm not going to be the military commander here and tell you what to do or make the decision for you and then get you to follow it, which is what he normally does. You can go and deal with it yourself. And that's the antithesis of the Danny Pink point, which was made last episode and then smugly brought up as the resolution to this one. So in every aspect of this story, it just made no sense. It was silly. It was derivative. I didn't feel the idea of the moon cracking. I agree, if it was a different planet, you could deal with it. But when it's something so close to home, again, it just breaks that suspension of disbelief. And there's that sort of slight pompousness in the stories as if it's a really good idea. And it's like, well, no, it's an idea that's been done many times before. In fact, it was sort of done last series with the Rings of Akaten, you know, where you've got a sort of like satellite, sort of sun-like planet thing, which is alive.
Yeah.
It's nothing new. So, yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think it's pretty terrible.
Brian, do you remember when we were writing the Time Reach?
Okay.
Yeah. And because it was a three-parter, wasn't it? But originally it was going to be a six-parter. And one of the ideas was with the Daleks using the moon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, and my idea was that the moon was, I say my idea, I'm borrowing liberally from someone else here. But the idea for this story was that the moon was a giant Dalek battleship that had been put in position in the Time War. Excuse me. And had been there for like 100 million years. In Doctor Who lore, the arrival of the Silurians is what... beg your pardon. The arrival of the moon is what causes the Silurians to hibernate. Now, my reason for bringing this up is because the use of the moon in these kind of ways isn't nothing new. There are legends around the world. Like, there are stories about the moon arriving. The Red Indians, I'm never going to say Red Indians again. There's several American Indian tribes have stories about it. And I think there's a Maori or Australian native story about it as well. So it is, I'm not going to go into any kind of history revisionism, but Doctor Who has a long history of borrowing from these kind of sources. You know, the whole Time Lords is very, Eric von Daniken, Chariot of the Gods, like Time Lords coming to Earth and helping humanity. You've got Scaroth the Jaggeroth in the City of Death, which again lends into that kind of thing. So playing around with the moon and what the moon is isn't anything new. But I wonder whether what we're going to remember is the moon thing, what we're going to remember most for this episode, or is it the Clara thing at the end?
Cool.
The moon thing.
Yeah, I have to go with him. Yeah, with James here.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, because we've had this sort of... I mean, the other problem I have with the end thing with Clara is that, and it's not just Doctor Who, but Doctor Who does it a lot, is this perpetual use of irrational female anger, which is then validated within the program. You get this a lot. You get it in Buffy. You get it through quite a few mainstream TV shows where the girl makes what is very much an emotional outburst, which then the story sort of kind of justifies. You get the feeling you're meant to feel for her over the doctor. The doctor's in the wrong, which is why the doctor has no real counter argument. He tries, but he fails each time because she's almost like scolding a naughty schoolboy and then storms off, and you're meant to feel for her. And then you've got the Danny thing, which reinforces this because he's sympathetic to her. But ultimately it is basically, you know, having a tantrum, and only women in film and television seem to get to do this. You know, men don't do it. Men, when they're angry, they have some sort of rational argument or real rational basis. Hers isn't there, really. Her argument is just simply, I'm annoyed that you put me in a position which I didn't want to be in, and you left me there to deal with it. And you think, well, that's part of what you do, isn't it? Isn't that what you go out there to do, to make a difference? And it's just because you don't like the way it was done, and you're suddenly expecting him to act like a normal human. And we've had this thing go through, you know, Rose has argued about it before. I think Martha has, and human nature, and this idea that he's not a person, he's not a human, and yet they sort of, he gets chastised for it.
Okay,
so go on.
Well, I was going to also ask, is how do you feel about Clara after that outburst?
Honestly, like I had already said, after that outburst, I was just kind of more annoyed that it was even there. I felt it was unnecessary. I felt it was boring. I felt it was old territory. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wish we could have moved on from it, kind of thing. And the way that I'm looking at it is, I don't understand what she was so annoyed about, because from the point of view that the doctor made this choice, like, I can't be the one who makes the choice for your planet. It's your planet. You guys have to do this together. Now, when you look at the reality of the situation, he should have told Clara and Courtney that it wasn't their planet either, because they're not from that time. They can't make choices for the people of that time. But what he did was he left people who are humans. You know, Courtney there, I guess, as a voice of, you know, of emotion, but Clara as a voice of somebody who is now an experienced time traveler and someone who's learned a lot from their travels with the doctor. You know, he left her there because he knew, you know, while I'm leaving you behind here, I know you'll make the right choice, the one that I would make, but the one I can't make because it's not my planet. You know, he knew leaving her there was a wise idea. It showed faith and it showed trust in her. And, you know, it, rather than saying to her, I'm leaving you here because I trust you'll make the right choice, see ya, you know, like he can't do that. He has to put the weight on her shoulders for her to go ahead and make the right choice, because he can't be seen to be influencing. And I liked that, because even while Gallifrey is not there, he has known, he has learned in the new series, when he makes these big weighty decisions or these big changes, issues come from it. There's still trouble that happens. You know, so he has to put that choice in the hands of the people that belong there. And I felt it was fine. And it really should have shown how much he trusted her. Instead, she took it as how much you abandoned me. And I just felt it was wrong. I felt it was odd.
It felt a little out of character, really, because, I mean, the whole point of Clara, if anything is definitive about her up to this series, is that she has this remarkable amount of trust in him, a remarkable amount of faith in him. You know, Time and the Doctor is all about that. Faith, even when he sort of tricks her, she's there for him. You know, there's that sort of loyalty. And I think my problem is that, like Brian said earlier, oh, I'm such a time traveler, that it'll never be picked up on. That's what gets me, is that she's introduced key issues within their schism in their relationship, in their dynamic, which will not be addressed again. I can almost guarantee it. There'll be obviously an issue that will bring them back together or pull them apart, whatever. But what's been said now will never be reconsidered. And I think that's a shame, because at the moment, essentially, if she was really wanting to be righteous, she could have sort of gone on the grounds of Courtney and what Courtney was, Courtney being left in danger, you know, because he did leave her in a potential nuclear situation. But that wasn't even covered particularly. And maybe then she wouldn't have grounds, because she was the one who let Courtney be there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And yeah, I think the other problem with the episode, which I suppose we've got to highlight again, is the Nightmare in Silver effect, is that you bring kids into that TARDIS, it weakens it. It becomes, it's the Batman and Robin syndrome. You know, Batman is tough and hard by himself. Put a 14-year-old boy with him and suddenly you start thinking, why is a 14-year-old boy being taken into danger?
Yeah.
It's a stretch with an 18-year-old Rose, but like a 10-year-old? It doesn't float with me. You can do it in, you know, old Doctor Who annuals, but you can't do it on television. It just feels farcical.
With regards to that outburst, do you feel that it was written in order or intended for us to side with Clara?
Yeah.
Do you know anyone who has sided with Clara?
No.
Yeah. That's what I kind of feel as well. Brian?
But if it isn't, then it's also turning you against Danny, because Danny is there supporting her decision.
Yeah.
And I don't get the feeling that they're trying to do that with Danny. Certainly. But yeah, I wonder again, as you say, whether they're realizing that the intended mark is perhaps not hitting the mark. And incidentally, the people I've spoke to about this episode were all bored by it.
Really?
Yeah, two active family friends of mine I spoke to at the weekend, they're on their iPads by halfway through. It was a big family do. I asked my sister, she went up to her room apparently, she got bored. She liked Listen, she liked the Time Heist, but she said this one. She said, I realized I had to go and clean my toilet, so I went and did that. So, you know, it's obviously not a broad demograph, but people who aren't massive weirdos like us weren't impressed from my experience.
Okay. It looked good, didn't it?
Yes, and the acting was good. I suppose we better say that while Clara's scenes were irritating, she played them perfectly.
Yeah, and I think they made a good choice going out to Lanzarote, because he did look quite stunning.
Yeah, I mean, it had a lot going for it visually, like you guys said, with the acting. And like you said, Christian, earlier on, it had a point where it made a turn.
Yeah.
So it had a point where it was going really nice and really interesting, you know, and then it just made this turn where things went sour. But there were a lot of good things within it still to be enjoyed. And it's still like I keep saying in all these podcasts, the cinematography in these episodes keeps getting better and better. I really loved. I also, one of the things I actually really thought was cool too was seeing people on the moon, but not seeing them in that standard slow bouncing, slow motion. Like, it was weird. It was jarring, but in a good way. It helped you realize something was completely wrong with this situation. These people are able to move normally on the moon. So there's this moonscape that I'm used to seeing in a very particular way, and they're breaking that way. And it was so neat to see.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to that turning. Oh, go on. What are you going to say?
I was just going to say, do you think, in a sense, the mistake was it was trying to be too clever? If they'd done the standard Alamo effect of having them sort of stuck in like Water of Mars, I guess, to a certain degree, but with spiders on the moon, because you could have forgiven the whole Courtney thing at the beginning if that turning point had taken it into perhaps a more of a traditional lockdown affair.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, where did you think it was going? Because I had all sorts of thoughts went through my mind. At one point, I was thinking there might be like a giant Dalek again inside there or something, and the spiders were, you know, like a motif of the old spider Dalek thing, or that there was some kind of giant spider and it was going to recall.
I want that.
I didn't know if I necessarily thought Daleks, but I definitely did just think that something was living inside the moon. Something was changing the moon for its purposes, kind of thing. I didn't think the moon was going to be alive at first. Which I think I probably would have liked better. You know, I don't know. The idea that the moon was an egg, it's okay. It's interesting. I guess, again, if they had done it for an alien planet, somehow I probably would have felt more okay with it. But being for Earth, all the things that we've already seen in the show's history of them doing on the moon, it just kind of made me feel a little bit more like, I think this would have been better if somebody were using the moon in some way for some reason. Even if it, you know, and I've talked about this before, there's been a great lack of like alien invasions toward Earth ever since Moff had taken over. There's been a few, but like nothing grand, nothing interesting. Every story is always kind of incidental, or there's just some odd, strange, accidental thing that is happening. And I think it would have been neat if somebody was trying to do something to the moon to intentionally cause disaster on Earth, you know, and we had to stop them. I miss that kind of feel to the show. And we had it a little bit with The Caretaker, But even then, it was incidental. It was accidental. That thing wasn't sent here for any purpose. It came there because of the Artron energy. You know, I'd like to see, you know, and I'll use the Suntarans as an example, but I'd like to see, like, the Suntarans come and invade Earth somehow or do something. Or, like, the Altans again, like a backdoor invasion by starting with a small village. I know it may be silly and corny now by today's standards, but I miss that stuff. It's neat when there is actually a bad guy rather than some accidental thing that we just have to understand.
Or a phenomenon.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Okay. So are we, so now I'm thinking, well, have we spoken about everything that we should speak about with this? And if so, how am I going to move on from Kill the Moon? I'm going to take a hammer to my face to remove this hair that somehow attached itself to my top lip, for start off. And then I'm wondering, back to the point, you know, at this stage, in previous six podcasts or whatever, we've had a little bit of a rating thing going on. Maybe we've talked about the previous six episodes, like we did last week, and how it all fits in. And now we get to this one, I think, is this the worst episode of the season? Worst episode the right description?
Yes.
Okay. Is it just
there's episodes that can go either way. I don't think this one feels like an either way. There's episodes that can go either way or that, that sit on the fence, they teeter and have people going, that was awesome, or I really hated this one. I don't feel this one was that way. Okay. You know, so like that's why I do think the worst fits it. And I'm sorry, I know I cut you off there and you had a third option there, and I'm curious to hear what the third option was, but I just don't feel this one has that kind of, it could be okay. Like, there are episodes before in the past where somebody could have said to me, well, think about this aspect in this way. And occasionally it makes me go, you know what? That's good. I can enjoy this episode now because you've put this new perspective on it. Hmm. I don't feel there's a new perspective that can hit this episode that can make me change my mind on it.
Okay. Shall we find a description for it? I have a description you might agree with. Cut price Waters of Mars.
I liked Waters of Mars.
Yeah, that's why this one's a cut price version.
You know, I... No.
No, okay. Well, let's...
Moon the Moon.
that sounds like a dance.
Ball pukingly bad?
No, well, no, you're getting silly.
I don't know. I think that could actually be quite sensible then for this episode because it was horrendously silly. I mean, even as one of our writers sort of pointed out yesterday, and I thought it was a very good point, is things like, you know, the ramifications. You do an episode like this, things like, you know, getting the whole planet to turn its lights on and off. You know, you've got a 45-minute window to... It just becomes, you know, you do something as big as this, you can't make it like a second act. Has some second act structure thing. It's got to be the whole thing. It's too big. And it just seems silly. It's just silly. I think that's just what you should call it, silly.
Well, you see, that whole thing is, you know, we all know that the governments would have just, like, instructed the power companies for power cuts, don't we? You know?
Right.
So yeah. that whole element of it was pointless. And then just, like, contradicting the results at the end anyway. And that
well,
whole precedent.
That too, exactly.
There was no need to press the button. All she could have done was, you know, she could have said a prayer or something.
And the other thing with that, which really gets me, is that there is a potential secondary ramification that comes from the old argument that does the ends justify the means when you know the ends. Now, we know in this case the ends meant that there was no problem at all. It all evaporated and did silly sci-fi, silly things, fantasy things in space, and the moon was back and everything was okay. But she could have pressed that button and the moon could have exploded, destroyed the entirety of Earth, killed Courtney, and, you know, from not pressing that button, could have been totally the other way. But because it all was okay, that's fine. You know, it's such a massive decision that for one character to take. And as I said before, not really in that character's... I don't think any person's remit. I think you'd even find the biggest environmentalist would find that a hard thing to press, not to press.
Yeah.
Did I or am I just a being a bit... Go by?
Hey?
Nobody else heard that? Okay.
What did you say?
I thought I heard a horse go by. It sounded like somebody was clapping two coconuts together.
No, James is at farm school. He's saying he's doing a film. He's actually at farm school.
I'm standing in the freezing cold on campus next to an automatic door which keeps opening and people with high heels keep walking out and interrupting the podcast.
There it is.
No, he's actually at King Arthur School and he's being followed around by Terry Gilliam banging two coconuts together.
Well, that would be very English. I'm sure Brian would believe that.
I would believe that. I mean, it's probably your butler you've been talking about all this time.
Well, the campus is in my grounds. I don't think I'd actually move somewhere. We just put it out the back behind the stables, but carry on.
Oh, yes. What were we saying? Yes. Oh, yeah. You know, that was another thing that actually did annoy me about the episode. It was kind of like, why would Clara even bother to put it to a vote if she was so decided that she was going to save the creature anyway? What was the point? Why didn't she just fight the one woman that she needed to fight there on the moon to save the creature?
Yeah, I think this is probably, in terms of lots of things, you know, it's well made, it's well acted. Peter Capaldi was absolutely fantastic, especially at the end.
Yeah.
Because he kind of won that argument by just a couple of looks.
Do you think that maybe it should have been written? Because one argument I heard someone say, another person who hated this actually, friend Holly, I think it was, she pointed out that she kind of felt that it just weakened the Doctor again. So a bit like Tennant was weakened to Rose and so was Eccleston, that he should have had a stronger standpoint at that point, even if it was fine, go get out.
Yeah,
you know, there was a certain amount of she's won this argument. I'm a little child. I've done wrong, and now I'm by myself, sort of thing to it. You think, well, no. Why should he feel like that? I mean, I get the impression he's possibly spending years away before he goes and visits her again.
He'll probably be 3,000 next time we see him now.
But exactly. You know, at the moment, again, this is my final point, possibly on Kill the Moon. Is it just reminds me they need to get rid of this stupid structure, which has now been going nearly 10 years of going back to Earth to sort of drop companions off, hang around with them, introduce these contemporary lives to them, which just get in the way. They confuse the episodes. If she was on that bloody ship with him at the beginning of the story, end of the story, and they didn't know where they were going, I think they would find the show would get a new lease of life. It would feel fresh.
You'd get rid of
the lonely god worry, because if he can't control a TARDIS, he can no longer be the lonely god, because that takes all his power away, because he can't preempt episodes. He's on the back foot the whole time. You'd get rid of these extra scenes, which the show doesn't have room for. It doesn't have room for these little debates with Danny Pink and the likes. And you get a far better, smoother thing. And I think kids want to see that. Kids want escapism. They don't want to keep going back to Grange Hill or to the Ponds house or to an estate. You know, move on.
Yeah.
I also think, too, like, not only just, like, weakening the character, but, you know, there were a couple people that I have heard that were trying to tell me that Capaldi was too rude and too mean, and they weren't sure about him yet. They weren't liking him. And then you get in this episode, you now have, you know, your companion yelling at him, essentially telling him the same thing. It's just going to validate those people who are already iffy and on the fence now, you know. And then you're also going to have other people going, wow, I was starting to like Clara this season, but now she's even getting all rude and like, why am I supposed? It was almost like like watching the Davison era, where nobody wanted to be on the TARDIS anymore. And I know the Davison era has good stories, but it's always an era that I have a lot of issues watching, because nobody wants to be there. It's not fun if nobody wants to be there. You know, and it's almost like the same thing. Like they get along, and then there's this big fight. Like, name one episode this season where she hasn't slapped him or hasn't talked about slapping him. And let's just get over that. Let's get past that. Let's just show them having fun and doing fun things. And I certainly agree with you, James. Get the hell away from going to Earth every like. Moffat did it worse, if you ask me, than Russell, because he's constantly just taking the companions home and going, "I'll see you tomorrow." At least with Russell, we got the impression that they could have been out there for a couple months going, oh, that's right, let's go visit your mom now. You know, like, that's okay, I can live with that. I'd like to get away from that too. But it's been worse since Moff came on, because it's always take the Pawns back home. Like, what were we even taking the Pawns back home for? They didn't have family, really, that we saw or did anything with. It was just to let them, sleep in their own house. And now with Clara, you know, she's mysteriously a teacher, so we have to see that new relationship that's coming from her being a teacher. It's just, it bugs me so much. It, like, and we talked about this in earlier episodes, how it just keeps removing me from the story.
It is a contrived set of situations.
Yeah.
If there's nothing natural about them. Let's move on. Yeah. We're not going to go over an hour today because we've got James having to, I don't know.
In the freezing cold.
In the freezing cold, outdoors in the freezing cold of his grounds. And we've got Brian who needs to get away on the dot today. Chaps, recommendations time. Let's not mention Kill the Moon. Let's find some genuine recommendations for our dear listener. And if you haven't got any,
go ahead, Christian.
I may well start. And I will give you what is turning to be. I've been reading this quite slowly, and as I ramble a little bit here, dear listener, I give James and Brian a quick chance to think of something while I'm talking. And but I got this at Christmas, and it was a special. I've probably mentioned it on the podcast before, but somehow I haven't managed to get to the end of it yet. And it's Terry Pratchett's Raising Steam, which was last year's Discworld novel. I got a collector's edition exclusive to W.H. Smith, says the sticker on the front, which tells me I've got bonus content. But as I don't have any other copies, I don't know what the bonus content is. There's no like DVD or CD or special download code or anything like that with it. But what it is, it tells the story of Moist von Lifwig, who was first introduced in Going Postal a few years ago. He was in Going Postal a few years ago, and there's a movie version that was on Sky of Going Postal, which is very good. It's arguably the best adaptation of a Pratchett novel. And he's in charge of building a railway through Ankh-Morpork Park and off to Stolat and other places. And it's a very funny book, and it also indulges Terry Pratchett, one of his other big loves, which is railways. And seeing railways in Discworld is quite odd, but it's strangely satisfying at the same time, and there's some good new characters in there. So if you haven't read Raising Steam, or if you haven't read any Terry Pratchett, it's not a bad place to start, actually. It's quite a good one. So that's my recommendation. It's a book. It's a booky book. The matter of the 12th Doctor novels that we talked about last time, Silhouette, The Crawling Terror, and The Blood Cell, the news team are going to be reviewing those. They'll be renaming themselves the Reviews Team for that. And we'll have those on Casterbus in the next few days. We will also be kicking off The Man Who Would Be King on Casterbus. And we'll be talking about it next time, I think, on the podcast. It's a new series in which we look at a selection, I'm not giving any names away at this stage, of potential executive producers who are all in with a shout, we think, one more than others. Presumably, of replacing Stephen Moffat. Should he be moving on from Doctor Who after Series 9, which is what the smart money is on at the moment. Okay, so that's my recommendation, Terry Pratchett's Raising Steam. James?
I'm going to recommend... I think, first of all, I'm going to recommend that anyone who actually reads the article on The Man Who Would Be King... gets a little black permanent marker, and where you see the title, just find a little spot to use WAN surreptitiously in that sentence. It will become a little funny. You will ruin your monitor, but you know, sometimes it's the moment that matters. And maybe also you'll be able to then reflect how it is very stupid to take advice from people bored and cold in the rain on a campus than it is to actually deface your materials to make masterberry jokes. I'm not sure your masterberry is actually a word. If you think that is a word, again, you shouldn't be taking words from someone who's very cold on campus and not really thinking about things very straight. I'm going to recommend Seeds of Death and the Moon Base because I think they're two very good moon-based episodes.
We've actually got a post pending on moon-based episodes, actually.
Oh, right. Well, there we go. Well, I recommend...
Nice synergy.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I would say, I mean, Seeds of Death, I think, is one of my favourite Troughton ones. It's one of the first Doctor Who's, old classic Doctor Who's I got hold of when I was starting to collect them. And I just think it's exactly what the Kill the Moon should have been. It should have been an invasion story. I mean, the spiders were good, and then they disappear, and they have no relevance to the whole thing at all, really, apart from to create a killing later.
It could have been Rachnos.
Yeah, it could have been Rachnos, could have been spiders. But, you know, I just sometimes think it gets away from the fact that not just children, but adults like a good bit of simple horror. It sells at the cinema.
Yeah.
You know, having why is trying to escape that for these constant silly sci-fi notions, which the show seems to keep jumping back to, which are fine in moderation. Yeah, so those are my two anyway.
Okay. Brian?
I am going to go with Moonraker for a good moon theme story. No, okay, seriously. I don't think I got to recommend this last time because I think I actually watched it after our podcast, but it's going online of my Pierce Brosnan viewing. I watched the Thomas Crown Affair as it was going away from Netflix, I realized I wanted to watch that one again. I'd seen it years ago. It is a great, I think we also may have mentioned it briefly in the last one we talked about it, but it's a great remake of a film, and I just think it excels in every way. It's a wonderful story about a billionaire who's just so bored with basically being rich and being able to buy anything that he decides instead, I'd like to start stealing the things I want, and it finds a soulmate through it. I don't know, it's a very basic breakdown of it, but it's such a great movie. It's such a good time. So I definitely recommend The Thomas Crown Affair.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, check it out. Seriously, yes. I think you really like it.
Okay.
It's a good kind of if you want to say almost in a sense heist movie, but not really. There's a lot more to it than just that, but it is good in that sense. Like, you'll get some really cool stuff from it. But I have a second recommendation because I've also been rewatching the TV series The Persuaders.
Okay.
With Tony Curtis and Roger Moore. And if you've been a podcast listener for a while, you know I have a love of Roger Moore as an actor, and I think he excels in this series. And more so, I think he and Tony Curtis just have this chemistry. They are just so much fun to watch together. What's that?
You said more so. And more so. You see?
Hey.
And more so, yeah.
More so, that's right. No, it's a fun adventure show from the 70s, so it's got that feel to it, of course. But, you know, just watching those two interact, I think the TV show could just be those two talking to each other for an hour, and I'd probably still enjoy it. But there you go. They're mine.
Okay, that's a good recommendation. Okay. Right. Any other business, gentlemen? Have I missed anything? Is there anything in Doctor Who news sphere that I should have mentioned in this week's Casterbridge podcast with a K? Can anyone think of anything that I should have mentioned?
No.
No, I don't think so. A bit of disappointment. Don't need to mention it, but it's worth re-mentioning again. I think there's a lot of people who are bitterly disappointed this week. Such a shame, because you don't want it, do you? You don't want to be bitterly disappointed, but it's just disappointed on so many levels. And I think it's such a shame. You know, I still think, you know, Time of the Doctor, Deep Breath was like where Clara was so spot on. And now, you can't watch it for her. It's terrible. Anyway, sorry. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Next. Do you think the week after is going to be Clara focused? Do you think they're doing a two production unit thing?
Might be, yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Did wonder that.
That would be
just
does that mean you watched the trailer?
I did actually watch the trailer. Yeah. I was so, believe it or not, I was so disappointed in the episode. I wanted to watch the trailer in the hope that that might just make me feel a bit better.
Oh, right. So did you spot Frank Skinner then?
I did, yes. And then I felt a little sad. I'm sure he'll be good. I mean, he seems a nice guy, and he loves Doctor Who, so I hope he had a good time and it's a good episode.
Okay. So that's probably, dear listener, brings us to the end of this week's Casterbridge podcast with a case a little shorter than early than usual. So feel free to maybe just listen to one of our others. Or if you're a time traveller, listen to next week's. Until then, goodbye.